At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Shop up to 40% off with minimum purchase and a free professional measure right now at Blinds.com. Plus, pay at your own pace starting at 0% APR with Affirm. Terms apply.
Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
Welcome in to the Punt Impasse podcast. I'm your host, Drew Butler. Join alongside my co-host, Jake Fromm. Be sure to follow us on social media. We are at Punt and Pass on X and Instagram. Subscribe to the YouTube channel as well. PuntandPass.com, the number one destination for all things college football. We are here today with a very special guest to kick off our off-season interview series. We thought about the biggest names we could get. We've got a bunch lined up, but we are starting with an absolute A-lister. Pleased to be joined today by Jake and I's good buddy, David Pollack. Now, DP, I'm going to give you a proper introduction here. A lot of people obviously know who you are, but I've got my notes. I come prepared. So let's just run down the list real quick. David Pollack, a three-time All-American at the University of Georgia, a Bednarik, Lott, and Lombardi Award Trophy winner, first-round draft pick in the 2005 NFL Draft, a College Football Hall of Famer, an esteemed college football analyst as well. Now he is in the podcast game. He's got two awesome podcasts, the C-Ball Get Ball podcast and the Family Goals podcast. And, of course, he does amazing work in the community with the Pollack Family Foundation. We're going to get to all of that, David. But first things first, how are you, my man?
Doing great. Thank you for having me on. And my goodness, I mean, that was you sold me. If anybody didn't believe, just listen to Drew. Good Lord.
There you go.
Good.
There you go. No, we got you covered, man. Thanks so much for your time. Been following you for so long. Obviously got to know you personally through Georgia football, which, of course, I'm very appreciative of. I love your takes right now on the state of college football, NIL, the transfer portal. I think you bring a very fresh perspective on that. So, of course, we're going to dive in deep to that stuff. But this is the interview series, man. So Jake and I thought about this. We wanted to keep things going, and we're fired up to have you. So how's the family? I mean, obviously, college football season's over. The Super Bowl just wrapped up. We got a long, long winter until football is back. But what's on the docket for David Pollack here over the next couple of months?
Man, we're finishing up basketball. So I coach varsity girls basketball at North Oconee High School. We're into the region tournament. Then we start the state championship run. My son's playing basketball as well. He's on the team. He doesn't play that much. I mean, it's crazy, guys, but like my son's starting to get recruited a little bit, which is weird. So we're starting to visit schools and got stuff on the docket. Me and my baby doll just went to Key West, just me and her for a weekend. That was absolutely fantastic. So we have no complaints, busy household, just like probably everybody else.
That's awesome. Hey, David, tell me a little bit about the perspective going through the recruiting process with Nicholas and how that has changed since, you know, you were getting recruited. And like, what are you even learning from, you know, what you know from the media side and then what you're learning, you know, actually going through it there with Nicholas?
Man, it's crazy. It's a crazy world, and just the if ands, the buts, and the way things are changing. So like, I'm kind of in this world doing some stuff with NIL, and I've been collecting stuff for years, the last like year and a half, 2 years. And you hear about the money, and you hear about like all the different things that go into it and how they're treating the players. And
is it real? Is the money real?
Oh yeah. The money's real. The money's absolutely real. Like, I think the numbers can get skewed sometimes, but the numbers continue to change every single year. They're growing and getting bigger. And when the NCAA decided to, hey, let's make a salary cap for these teams. They get 20.5. Well, basically they just cost their teams more money because everybody was spending money as it was. So it's a crazy world. Like, I really was just educating myself on, you know, with my son, and how do I handle coaches' talks and interviews, and how do you handle money? Because that's a weird thing with, like, you don't want to be the bad guy. You don't want to talk about this. And that's why agents are prevalent in the game. But the state of college football, man, the money is a big part of all the decisions and who's committing to what. The developmental piece, the relational piece that we all went to school for and that we loved, that's kind of irrelevant. Like, that's kind of, but my message to my son will be obviously different than a lot of people's message. Like, the money is great, but like, you're going to live in this town. You're going to be around these teammates. Like, you're making decisions based on the next 10 years, 20 years, not just these years in the moment. But you're also saying that to a 17-year-old who thinks he's got the world figured out. So like, I mean, it's a tough world to navigate, man. These kids, they're trying to find people they can trust to talk to, and you're just trying to be that for your family that's involved in it.
No, you bring up the best word, relationships, because I feel like that is what's lost in the day and age of college football as we're now in the year 2026. And to me, it's so unfortunate because I feel like I'm trying to thread the needle of being the old guy who, hey, I played and back in my day. But now, as a 36-year-old, with three kids and a wife who intentionally moved back to the state of Georgia after I got done playing in a great place in Phoenix, Arizona, because I wanted to be back around the University of Georgia, back around the people that helped me, back around the people that I know that will continue to help me. And it is really hard to get that message across to whether it be your son who's 17 or somebody who's making a decision based on life-changing amounts of money. But DP, relationships, man, that's what football is all about. And unfortunately, I feel like that's just not even a conversation anymore.
It's not as much a conversation. And here's the thing, to get people to look past the here, the now, it's hard. It's very hard. And so we're always trying to push forward and do better. But here's what I try to convey to folks. Like, if I was a two-time All-American at Georgia and then I took the money, and I went somewhere else, like, where do I go home?
Yeah.
Like, what school do I go back to? Like,
well, that's the Ty Simpson dilemma, you know?
Does Georgia want me back? Like, do they want me? Are they going to accept me back in their building? Let me tell you something, man. Like, I can't tell you how blessed I have been by Georgia fans in the state of Georgia for business. Like, business opportunities are so awesome. The connections because you play somewhere are so awesome. There are people that are moving their families across the country, taking new jobs for $40,000.
Yeah.
Like, they're getting $40,000 more. It's going to cost them $10,000 to move. Like, it's going to cost them probably more than that in the end all be all, but they're making decisions because they think that's what they should do. So I think we've lost sight of that. And here's the thing. The bottom line is transactional coaches are what's winning now. Transactional coaches are the coaches that are there. The relational coaches are leaving. Nick Saban left for a reason. Klieman left this past year for a reason. Like, Hugh Freeze had a struggle for a reason. Like, Dabo has struggled a little bit in this area for a reason. These are coaches that want to build relationships. Like, and that is fine, but the relationship right now is the relationship between money. Like, how do I get my money? And that's, you know, at a young age, you'd like for these kids to learn a lot more than just, like, I go chase the money. And then there's later effects down the road of this too. But like, there's a lot of it, man, that you just want to shake them and be like, hey, listen, this decision down the road, man, this has made me way more than $40,000, right? Like, this has me a home. This has me unique things in the future that I think people probably aren't going to look towards.
Yeah. I think about when I was getting recruited and, you know, the pitch, like we all just said, you know, was relationship and network. Come in, compete, develop, win, and hey, there's a really good track record of us in the program putting people in the NFL. So two-part question here is, what is the pitch now? Is it any one of those things, or is it just all about dollars and money? And then two, is the relational aspect of college football, is it over? You know, is Dabo done, you know, trying to do it his way? Is how long can Kirby sustain the way he's doing it? He's trying to do it a slightly different way. He's trying to get young guys in to come in, stay in the program and develop, you know, versus an Indiana perspective, which is, hey, let's just go find, you know, the oldest, best players. Let's pay them because they're more mature and they know how college football is, how it works and how it goes.
The pitch is different at different schools and in different spots. And I'll be honest, if you're a coach at Oregon and Ohio State and Michigan and Indiana and Texas Tech and Texas A&M, you're sitting pretty good right now. Like, yeah, that's where you want to be because you don't have boosters that are millionaires. You have boosters that are billionaires, SMU. Like, the B is a little bit different, right?
It
like
is.
That's a big – so I'm recruiting – Like I'm basically, if I can offer the most money and still be relational, that's great. But the money is the a lot of kids are walking into schools now. The first meeting that they have, Jake used to meet your coach, talk to your coach, walk to the school, do all this stuff.
Oh, yeah.
They have the business meeting first.
Yeah.
That's what they do. At a lot of places, it's a business meeting first. And so you're going to have to find, so to your developmental question, there are still guys like Kirby that can go, hey, this is money, but let me show you real money. Let me show you what these guys are making at their second contract in the NFL. Mm-hmm. This is solid, but that we want that generational money. We want that will change your life way down the road. And so you can get people to stay for less money because they know they've got a better chance. You can build a different culture. To your last part, I do not take any pleasure in saying this. I want all the Dabo Sweeneys we can get in this world. I think it's hard, man, because I think because just like Dabo, look at Dabo. Dabo could have brought in a transfer portal quarterback and paid him a lot of money and known that he was good at the quarterback spot. Like, check. It's over. It's taken care of.
Yep.
Dabo's a guy that looks at his recruits and he goes, hey, when you come to Clemson, I'm going to give you an opportunity. Well, you didn't give him an opportunity.
Right.
If you bring in a $4 million quarterback, everybody knows what the heck is going on.
You know, just like in the NFL, if you pay a guy in free agency or you draft a guy in the first round, at some point he is getting on the field.
Yeah, you don't want to be Jake Fromm. You don't want to be the other guy in the room, right? Like, you don't want to be because Jake Fromm could go 17 for 21. It's like, that was pretty good. But do you see that guy throw it hard? Like, he threw it hard, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think when you're the most – when you're the highest paid guy in the room, there's a lot of advantages that come with that. So a lot of these recruiting purposes, 100%. It's like, hey, where am I at in the room? What am I getting paid? So I think those things come into play. So it's I hope that at some point we find a balance and we develop contracts and we collectively bargain, because then I think we get more accountability.
Yes.
Then we can be more relational. Then we can get the benefits of what we've always had with the sport of football that teaches you way more than just how to play the game.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things, looking at where we are now in the state of college football, yes, of course, NIL, which was approved in July of 2021, and that was a hallmark in sports amateurism and college sports to finally allow student athletes to make money off their name, image, and likeness. It's clearly been bastardized way past that over the last 4 years. But my opinion is that the transfer portal, or the essentially lack of rules and regulations around the transfer portal, was the gasoline that got thrown onto the little brush fire that was NIL. And again, I look at the transfer portal now, and I want to ask you a question first, because you talk about the business meeting being first and foremost in these recruiting pitches, and kids out of high school saying, well, I want to make the most amount of money and I'm going to go to the NFL. You were a 3-time All-American. You won all the awards. You were a first-round draft pick. Your first day at the University of Georgia, did you walk in and go, I'm going to the NFL. I'm going to go make money? What was your thought when you first got to Athens? Was it, I'm going to work my tail off and hopefully I get an opportunity to step on the field at some point?
Yeah, I think that, you know, I had the dreams and the aspirations that I wanted to go play in the NFL, just like a lot of people did. But, like, I come into Georgia as a fullback. So you're thinking, how do I get on the field, right? Like, and then everybody gets hurt at defensive tackle. I moved to defensive tackle. I played defensive tackle as a true freshman. And then everybody left for the NFL before my sophomore year in spring. So I moved to defensive end. So I played three positions in less than a calendar year, you know, at the University of Georgia. But I think people are coming in with a preconceived notion of, like, this is who I am. This is what I am. You're paying me to do this. So you're just less likely to listen, right? Like, you're less likely to take hard coaching. right? And so when you have a parachute that you can pull, like when we transferred back in the day, like you had to sit out a year. So you had to think hard about that when you made that decision. Now you're like, all right, when you had two transfer portal windows last year and you could pull it at two different times, it's like, man, these coaches mean to me. Well, yeah, the coach is supposed to be mean to me.
Exactly.
Like the coach is supposed to push me to become the best version of me. So I think you have a group of kids now that like the one side of it, they're not getting mother blanked all the time. And they're probably their mental health can be probably better. The other side of it, they're conditioning to resiliency and adversity and how to handle hard, which is what you're going to handle the rest of your life.
Exactly.
Like it's going to get hard, right? It's not a matter of if, it's always a matter of when. So I think that's the balance between when you do the system and when it's like that right now is, you know, how much do you allow people to really get into your life and say things that you don't like when you're making a good bit of money. And here's another thing too. You feel very comfortable.
Yeah.
Like you got money in the bank. We didn't have money in the bank. We couldn't even get like bagels and cream cheese. We just got bagels. Like you couldn't get both.
It's so funny because when I was in school, you know, Coach Bobo was the offensive coordinator. Coach Searles was the offensive line coach. Todd Hartley was a student assistant. I was there with Mike McDonald, John Lilly, who's back on staff now. Like I remember Bobo and Searles, just because I was a punter and just because I roomed with an offensive lineman and a quarterback, they would lay into me as much as they possibly could, right? Oh, yeah. And I remember Coach Lilly heading into my sophomore year, you know, I redshirted my freshman year. He had a very candid conversation with me, and he was essentially like, you have to improve. You have to become more consistent. And plus, we're going to go shopping. We need to find a punter for next season. And that was like a light bulb moment for me. And those guys coached us so hard because they knew that you were there. They knew that you couldn't just up and leave. And again, going back to where I'm at today with kids and a wife and 36, like I am so appreciative of that hard coaching, David. And I feel like that just can't happen in this day and age.
It's definitely harder. I mean, there's a couple of places that can do it, but you got to have a really special individual at the helm that can do both and convince kids that that's what's best for them. Like, listen, we got one in Athens. Dude wears a Madonna mic, right? And just blasts people for everybody to hear, right? Like he's got that mic going and he gets away with it. Like, but very, very few, you know, it used to be the norm when I went to practice to hear coaches undressing kids.
Oh, yeah.
Like it was absolutely the norm. Now you're like, this is different. This is definitely a different culture, a different environment. And, you know, navigating it, especially the last couple of years when the goalposts were always moving. Right. Like the rules were always changing. It's hard to figure out, you know, what you can and can't do, what is legal, what isn't legal. And that makes the job even harder.
I think the gray area or, you know, it's somewhere in the middle. You know, I don't think position coaches and head coaches should bless you out for any and everything. But, you know, now they are in a much different situation where they have to be a lot softer. We talked about head coaches and we talked about position coaches. But I think the most important thing, especially for me, was the training we got from the strength and conditioning coaches, because they are technically with you more than your position coaches are. And man, the winter workouts, the summer runs, right? Man, that is where you get gut punched and that is where you get tested. And, you know, as old heads and guys who have played, you know, in the past, everybody always thinks the younger guys have it way easier. But that is actually fact in today's football, man. Yeah. I was just with them at the ESP event the other day and they were, you know, escorting for the talent show. I'm like, hey man, how's the winter workouts going? They're like, yeah, man, we really hadn't, you know, done a whole lot. And it's really not as hard as it used to be. And these are guys who've only been in the program 2-3 years. And they're like, yeah, man, it's much easier this winter than it was, you know, last winter or 2 winters ago.
Well, one thing to that component too, though, the schedule's also different. So they played in well into January.
Right.
Like so it is a little bit what they're asked to do with their bodies, obviously, they push them further. Here's another thing too. Everybody's doing more at a younger age than they used to. Like when I was at Shiloh High School, listen, we were not good for a reason. Our summertime conditioning consisted of, hey, come in and there's a workout on the board and just get it when you can.
Right, right.
Like literally, that's what we did. And now
that wasn't
like,
the case for me. And you know,
no,
there's an age gap here.
I feel better with Drew talking about it when he says he's 36. Okay. But like it's so it is different. Like these kids have been grinding. And here's another thing too with NIL. Like this money that's being talked about, you thought parents were crazy when they were young a while ago. Forget like this is even more because now it's not just the NFL. Now the college is a meal ticket, right? Mm-hmm. For a lot of these parents to be able to get to. So they're doing more, but yeah, the training changes. Listen, spring ball will get to the point where it's just OTAs. Like that's exactly right. Where we'll get. We're going to get to this point where we'll break off and the Big Ten and the SEC runs the whole shebang. Like all of this is going to continue. We're going to get to the point where there's like football over here that for everybody that wants to play. And then there's real big boy football over here. Like the changes are coming. It's just hard when you live in a state of flux, you know, in a state of always changing. And so I think athletes, they definitely understand, like you always different stages, like where you understand your power. They understand their power now.
Absolutely. No, that's great. I want to transition and get a little bit of background on your media journey because I find it fascinating. And I'm not sure if a lot of people really understand how you got to the top of the top. Of course, I want to understand more about what you're doing now. But going back to your transition out of football and into media, working radio here in Atlanta on 790 The Zone, doing Comcast TV here locally, and then transitioning towards ESPN. I remember watching you. I think you were calling the Thursday night football games back when I was in college. And then, of course, you end up on the desk at College Game Day. Just walk us through what that transition was like and how your rise happened so quickly, because I think it speaks to, one, your talent, but two, just how good you were in media and how good you are still.
And your work ethic.
I think you got to get fortunate, right? Like I definitely didn't deserve to get to the desk that quickly and to be up there at College Game Day. I think that I hated the media. I could not stand the media for the same reason y'all couldn't. So many guys that say things just to say things that aren't prepared, that don't really know what's going on with the team. And that kind of drove me nuts. And so I was very hesitant when I started in the media, but I was like, okay, fine. If I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it my way. I'm not going to call kids out. I'm not going to say things just to say things. And I'm going to be honest. So with that, like, I did not develop relationships with coaches. Like I didn't talk to coaches around the country. Like I really just poured myself into watching tape and being really good, like trying not to listen to everyone else's opinions, try to go develop my own opinions, my own convictions and watch things with my eyes. And it required a lot of time. Like, right. It required, I vividly remember almost every single night, like my kids were y'all's kids' age where they were younger. And I remember putting my kids to bed. I remember hanging out with my wife for a little bit. And I remember I would stay up till, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning because I knew a lot about Georgia, but I didn't know about Kansas State.
Yeah.
I didn't know a lot about Oregon, like Oregon State. Like I didn't know the conferences. So like, you start like really just diving in. And I remember the first paycheck I got from ESPN when I was doing ESPNU. And I remember the depression that set in because you go from the NFL, you make really good money. I made $1,200 a month, my first contract with them. Like you talk about rolling, man, I'm rolling in it. Let me tell you, like I'm rich. So I literally was like, all right, look at yourself as a sophomore, you know, in high school or a sophomore in college, a freshman in college. Like you got to go earn it. You got to do it, right? Like this is, you've got to put in the work to earn the right to get down the road. And then man, just really, really blessed with several opportunities that arose that I got to take advantage of with people like Herb Street that helped me along the way. I remember he was watching one of the SEC Gridiron Lives things you were talking about on Comcast, and he was flipping through the channels in Ohio, like and came across it. And then he called me because we had talked before, and he left me a message, and he was like, "Hey man, like I just wanted to tell you, like you're good at this." And I was like, "What?" He was like, "Yeah, why are you watching?" I was like, "Why are you watching this?" He was like, "I was just flipping through the channels, like, and I just loved your passion, and I loved it was coming through the screen, and so I was trying to. So you're trying to figure things out, right? Like you're trying to figure out who you are, what you are. But the biggest thing, Drew, like the biggest reason, like I got to become successful was because I studied it, I watched it, I learned it. And I was okay with people feeling some kind of way about it. Let me tell you something, Georgia fans, they called me Benedict Arnold for a long time because I picked against Georgia. I'm like, do you think Georgia's going to win every game? Like, now listen, there was a few years there where it was really nice and it was easy to pick Georgia. But, like, I think it's, you know, you got to be okay with, like, doing your job, doing it with, as best as you can, and then being okay with people not necessarily caring for you and your takes. And that's okay, right? Like, just like see ball, get ball, like what I do now. Like, we got offered, and Jake knows this because I was talking to him about it, but, like, we got offered an ungodly amount of money. Like, and we're a podcast that's growing a year in. We got offered so much money, but it was gambling.
Yeah.
Like, I don't gamble. It'd be like me doing an alcohol commercial. I don't do that. Like, so you've got to develop things and convictions that are very much like who you are, what you are, you know, non-negotiables. And then, and you learn as you build your, and you build who you are and what you are as you go along. But the number one thing is you just got to go do it, right? Yeah. Like in life, we can't just wait till it's perfect. It's never going to be perfect. Like, we got to go. We got to take steps, do some things. And then once you start getting down the road, you're like, okay, I like this. I don't like this. But I had a good starting pot of being a player and seeing what I did not like in the media from the guys that came up to you all the time.
Yeah, that's definitely kind of been a big, I don't know, revelation or hesitation kind of where I always kind of started with the media because I did a lot, you know, I had a lot of interviews and I saw a lot of people who I thought did it well. And then I also saw a lot of people that I didn't think did it well, you know, just same as you. And so I think that is what we're trying to do here, me and Drew, of trying to do it what we think is the right way and put our own spin on it and definitely have a lot of passion too. So that's what we're trying to do.
How was that travel schedule with College Game Day with young kids? I mean, that is a grind, David. And obviously you did it for a very long time. But, you know, everybody wakes up at 10 a.m. or 9 a.m. now and you watch Game Day. And if you're an aspiring football player or a broadcaster, you're like, man, this is it. This is the pinnacle. But it's tough work, man.
It is. Now, So I'll tell you this. I had a speaking gig this past week where I was going and speaking. And I showed my baby doll. I showed my wife, I was like, babe, look at this. So I'm almost a million miler at Delta.
Wow.
Like, I literally am about to cross a million miles in the air. And that shows you, like, it was crazy. I used to do the Tuesday night show in Bristol, go to Thursday night football afterwards, call the Thursday night game, go to game day the next day, do game day Saturday, do the recaps on Saturday night, go home on Sunday morning.
Yeah. Right.
Like, And here's what I did as a dad. I justified it's just during football season. During football season. And you kind of justify. And what was really cool was my kids came with me a lot. Like, Nicholas has been to 28-plus campuses. Like, he brought a buddy every time with him. And we made it a family affair as much as we could. My daughter had no desire to go, so she came, like, seven times. But, like, yeah, it takes a lot, man. There's a lot of commitment to it. And you don't get there. Like, and all of a sudden just do that show, right? Like, you've got to earn your way to it. And
absolutely.
We did Palmer and Pollock at ESPNU for a while. Like, nobody ever watched, you know? And then, you know, you build your way up and you do College Football Live and different shows. And so there's a lot to it, man. Now, I'll be honest too, though. It ain't working really. It's fantastic. Like, sure, to be able to go to the different campuses, to feel the different scenes, to get the different experience. It's awesome. Like, it is so much fun. And I did not consider it a hard job at all. Now that I've been fired and let go, I do enjoy the fact that I'm home. And I do enjoy the fact that because I was telling my wife, I'm like, listen, when Nicholas gets to high school and starts playing football, like, I'm not missing that on Friday nights.
Yeah.
And so, like, that got taken off the table, which was great. And so I've been able to see every single one of his games and will next year, you know, going into his senior year. And then who knows where the heck you're going to go next and now where he's, you know, going to play college football and what that looks like.
Before Drew gets into what he's about to ask, if you had to do it again, one, would you do it again? And then two, what would you do differently?
I would say I would do it again because one thing that I feel like I did a really poor job of, like, I remember at Georgia, I got overwhelmed by, like, being someone that was known, you know, like, I got overwhelmed and it was really hard, like, to always go out and to experience people. And it was difficult as an 18-year-old, 19-year-old, 20-year-old kid. Like, when I got the chance again, I was like, God, listen, like, God, please help me maximize this and use this for your glory. So, like, I'm very appreciative that God gave me an opportunity to stage to now do something good with it, right? Like to show people, like to try to take advantage of every opportunity to hopefully pour into someone's life. And you only get a second, but maybe it matters, you know? And so I'm very thankful for that. You know, I'm not a guy that would change a lot of things because I feel like you learn from exactly what you go to, but I would definitely say that I would have chosen to be home more. Like if I had a choice, like now I get to do it and I get to do it at my house and podcast from my house. Like I have opportunities to do TV every year, but it's like I'm home.
It's a big sacrifice.
Like why am I going to leave when I get to be home? And I got 1 year with my son left after this year and then two more years with my daughter. And it's just like I want to maximize it. So yeah, I would choose to be home more, but I'm also thankful for the opportunities that God's given me.
No, I mean, I love you saying that. It is a real sacrifice. I was just out at Super Bowl week, and I was at an event with Deion Sanders, and David, Deion blew me away. I mean, we were at this event with a bunch of kids, and one thing that he said, because there was a bunch of parents there as well, he just said, let me give you one piece of advice. You don't have to be a perfect parent. You just need to be a present parent. And I thought that made so much sense. Just be around your kids, be with your kids. And obviously you talk about making that a priority when you were traveling so much for ESPN. So ESPN ended in 2023. This is something that I wanted to ask you about because I'm not sure that I've heard you speak about it, but were you blindsided by it? I mean, you said you got let go. You said you got fired. Did you see the writing on the wall? Were you ready for the transition? I mean, obviously, it was a very public thing that happened, and you had been on the desk for so long. But, of course, you fell on your feet. You're a man of great faith and integrity, and you're kicking butt right now. But, man, that was definitely something that caught national headlines in a big way.
It definitely caught me off guard. It's not something that I saw coming. Now, I'll be honest. I got the call from the executive producer from Game Day, and it was July. And I was like, huh, that's interesting. So I pick up the phone, and then we start talking, and we're shooting the breeze. And I was like, oh, I know what time it is. Oh. Like, I know it's about to happen. Man, but it's just like anything else. Like, yeah, it stunk, but it also stunk to be to have your career ended with your neck in the NFL, right? Yeah. Like, that's just – but it's just part of the steps, man. And so I just – I had a lot of faith that that God was going to put me in the next direction and wherever he wanted me. And, you know, I was shocked. I was surprised. Harder to tell my family. I told my family and I think it wasn't a big deal. And then my baby girl's like, wait a minute. Are we going to have money? Are we going to be able to do this? And I'm like, yeah, we're good, babe. Like we've been blessed. Like, so I think we were definitely surprised, taken off. But just I think the thing that immediately set in was grateful. Like, sure. I got to do that. Right. Like I didn't deserve that. Like we don't deserve things in life. Like we can work really, really, really hard. That doesn't mean you deserve something. Like, so I was very thankful for those opportunities and just counted them as good and counted them as blessings. And then I was like, you know what? If God's brought me football and it was amazing and it was gone and broadcasting, it was amazing. It was gone. Like, I don't know what's next, but it's going to be awesome. And dude, I'm a children's book author. I wrote a regular book, which took a long time because I'm a dumb defensive lineman. It took years to write, right? Like I'm speaking, business, I'm doing business stuff. Like I'm doing all kinds of stuff that I never thought I would do. And I'm just very thankful.
That's awesome, man. And obviously now you guys are crushing it with See Ball, Get Ball and the Family Goals podcast. I see the clips all over social media. Tell us about each of those. What is See Ball, Get Ball? What do you guys talk about? And then Family Goals is definitely a unique one as well.
See Ball, Get Ball is just college football. Like we just talk college football several days a week, man. We have like one of the things we're doing this offseason, every coach that took a job in the Power Four, we're having every single one of them on. So like awesome. We just had Morgan Scalley on. It comes out today on YouTube, like from Utah. Everything about Morgan Scalley, but it's not like, it's more like this. It's more like getting to know who Morgan Scalley is, what makes him tick. You know, his background being a lifer, which I think is cool. Like his dad played at Utah. He was born in Salt Lake City, raised in Salt Lake City, hasn't left there. Like it's always been a part of him. And just like, who did you call when you took the job? So cool. See Ball, Get Ball. We talk college football, all the angles, all the things several days a week with a bunch of good guests. And then Family Goals, man, like that's me and my pastor. And we're just talking to you about your family and how you can set goals and set boundaries and how you keep God in the center of all the things that you do as a family. Because it can be hard, man. It's distracting. There's all these things that come, you know, for us to get pulled apart. And so how do we kind of create some goals and some structure? And we go through all the different areas in your life that probably can help you and try to set some boundaries.
Yeah, that's awesome. See Ball, Get Ball, and the Family Goals podcast. Definitely be sure to check it out on YouTube and, of course, on social media. How about the Pollock Family Foundation, something that you've been running now for quite some time? I've been fortunate enough to be involved with a couple of the golf tournaments there at the Georgia Club in Athens. You guys do phenomenal work, really impactful in the community. What's the biggest goals there with the Pollock Family Foundation?
Just make a difference. Me and Lindsay, my baby doll, we don't deserve what we have. And especially we tell our kids that all the time. We don't deserve what we have. But if we don't do something about somebody else's struggle, we're in the wrong. And, you know, the golf tournament's coming up on 5-4. We do that at Georgia Club every year to raise money. We give money to Children's Healthcare of Atlanta, Hope 139, a bunch of other organizations. We do we do my favorite event of the year. We do it's in Athens. It's at the Classic Center. It's called the Banquet of Blessings, where we bring in the homeless in the surrounding area, the underprivileged. We had over 1,200 last year. We throw the biggest feast you can believe. It's the Sunday of Thanksgiving. Everybody gets brand new coats and book bags.
Awesome.
And formulas and diapers. And we have hats, gloves, scarves, mittens, sleeping bags. Like, it literally is a list of things that they get to get. So, you know, we're just trying to do the best we can. There's plenty of need right here in our backyard with Athens, and those that that aren't as fortunate, that aren't as blessed, and we try to come in and try to serve a need any chance we get.
No, you guys have been doing a phenomenal job making real impact in and around the Athens community. So I commend you and everybody at the Pollock Family Foundation for that. For everybody out there, if you want to get involved, check out the Pollock Family Foundation online. You mentioned the golf tournament coming up on May the 4th. Now, I've heard this rumor, and I just got to ask if it's true or not. Now, I think it's true, but I also think it's kind of crazy. But I've known you for a long time, and I'm like, okay, I'll give DP a pass. Do you really do push-ups when you're playing a casual round of golf on the golf course? Is this what you do? Are you doing sprints and push-ups on the golf course?
Every round, not just casual round. It's every round. First of all, you will not get this butt into a cart.
Like, no, you'll never ride in a cart.
No, when I go to tournaments and I play with people for tournaments, I'm like, hey, good to see y'all. Like, but I'm walking. Like, I'm absolutely not jumping in the cart. So I'm always going to walk. Me and Jake play several times a year, and in the summertime we play a bunch. In the springtime, we have our carts. I finally got him walking now, and then we sprint every hill, and then every green. Think how easy this is, Drew. Every green, 25 push-ups. That's it.
A lot. I wouldn't be able to swing the golf club after the fourth hole.
Yeah, no, it's okay. So just do 10 if you want to, but 25, man, that way I get 200. If I play 9 holes most of the time, I get 225 push-ups and I walk over 4 miles. So I'm like, this is a form to me of cardio now. And then you do it with great people, man. And it's just, sure, it's fun and it's form. But if I'm there, man, like I want to maximize it and make it as much of a workout as I can. Cause I'll be honest, like, I'm not there for the golf. Like, I'm not there to be a professional golfer, but I want to be good. But
yeah.
If I can add on 225 push-ups or 450 for 18 holes and 8 miles walking, like, bro, I'm good. It's fantastic.
That's awesome. 2026, the year of fitness golf. I like that.
Yeah, baby.
We'll make you the president of that for sure. That's awesome. Let me ask you a couple of deep questions. We got a couple more minutes here. I want to know, what's the most important thing to you, David Pollock, at this stage of your life? What are you, 42 years old? You're a little bit older than I am.
43.
Yeah. What gets you going when you wake up in the morning?
I have the same routine every morning. I believe you got to be selfish in the morning so you can be selfless the rest of the day.
I like that.
And so, like, this morning I got up. I always do 20 minutes in quiet time in the sauna.
What time is this at? What time?
It depends on what my day looks like. If I'm going to the airport and I got to be there at 7:30, then I got to get up at 5. You know, like, I whatever that time it is, I got to give myself enough time. But I'm going to get 20 minutes in the sauna every single morning. I go straight to the cold tub, and I'm going to give you 6 minutes. And then I go straight to the treadmill and I walk for 45 minutes on a 13 incline, and then I 3 speed, and then I work out. So that's my morning every morning, like to wake up with purpose, to get still, to be with God for those 20 minutes, to give him the first part of my day, which is the best part of my day, in the sauna, and then get my mind right with what's coming. But I think what I want to do the rest of my life, man, whatever I do, like, my big goal, man, I want to honor God in all that I do. Everything that I do, I just want to stay in his will. Like, I don't care. Everything that I'm doing right now in business and stuff, I'm like, does it honor God? Like, does it honor God? Does it honor God? And that's kind of the filter that I'm trying to use, man. I'm trying to enjoy my family as much as possible, but like, I'm trying to help them walk in that calling as well. And just try to, everything we do, make sure that we do it with a purpose.
No, I love that. And you're living it. So you can absolutely speak on that. You know, you said something interesting there, going back to the fitness stuff, sauna, then cold plunge, then treadmill and workout. I actually saw something, I think it was on a Joe Rogan podcast with some like health scientists. And they said, if you do cold plunge before you work out, scientifically, it like triggers more testosterone receptors rather than after you work out. So I might try to add that into my repertoire as well. Now, we talked about this a little bit earlier. I mean, you have a high schooler of your own, and I think maybe some of your kids are still in middle school. But what advice would you, David Pollock, give to a middle or a high schooler who have aspirations to play college or pro sports?
Well, I would say worry about where you're at. Be where you're at. Like, if you want to play in the NFL, that's awesome. You can't play in the NFL if you're in middle school. You can't play in the NFL if you're in high school. Like, it doesn't happen that way. So, like, be great exactly where you're at. If you're in middle school, be great. If you're in high school, be great. Like, listen, there's going to be a come a time when this is going to be work, and you're going to have to grind like crazy to get where you want to get to. Like, enjoy the sport. Like, have fun with it. Like, learn to work. Learn not to quit. Learn to be tough. Learn to be disciplined. But I think the biggest thing is, man, don't quit looking ahead to, I always want to be at the next thing, at the next thing, at the next thing. Like, you can be great exactly where you're at, and you can win exactly where you're at. And that's going to look different at your different phases of life.
No, that's awesome, man. That's awesome. You reading any books? Do you listen to any podcasts? Do you have any recommendations for people that they need to check out, whether it be tune into this or, hey, here's a great book that I read recently?
Joby Martin's new book, Stand Firm and Act Like, I think it's Stand Firm and Act Like a Man. I think that's what it is. It's Stand Firm and something. He's got a great new book on challenging like husbands on how, like biblically on how, like how you've been made, like you've been created with a will to work, a woman to love. Like, and, but no, I'm a big reader when it comes to growing and learning. Yeah. I'm not a big reader otherwise. Like, sure. I'm not going to read novels and stuff like that. Like, that's not my thing, but I think it's so important to fuel the mind. And I listen to Frank Turek a lot on sermons and some of in his speeches, and I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist podcast is really, really good. But man, that's the cool thing about our world now is like, whatever you want to be an expert in, whatever you want to grow in, there's so many resources. Yeah. Like, you can look up so many things and start to listen and start to, you know, challenge yourself and start to live out some of the principles that you deem worthy.
I'm the exact same way. I mean, I'm sitting in my office right now. All the books around me are like, call them self-help books, call them business books, inspirational books. So I appreciate that. I wrote that one down, so I'll definitely buy that one. All right, last question. I'll be selfish with this last question. Give me some advice. I mean, you've known me for a very long time. I'm right down the road from you. I got three baby girls and a wife. My wife and I are about to celebrate 12 years of marriage. We're actually going to Disney World with the girls for the first time coming up this weekend as it's winter break. I need some advice from David Pollock. Talk to me.
You definitely need some advice if you're going to Disney World. Oh boy. Yes. Hey, put them comfortable shoes on, because you're about to walk lot. You know, listen, man, I think that, you know, I think all men, like when I was your age and I had young kids, did a really, really poor job, almost lost my marriage because I did not put God at the center of my marriage. I did not, we ran and we had fun and we hung out with people that had fun and we did a lot of sports. And it was like, we just went and did. We went on trips and did all these fun things. And it was like, what am I doing, man? I mean, like, am I really living on purpose and surrounding myself with the right people and trying to grow? Like, you are the average of the five people you spend the most time with. If you want a great marriage, don't hang out with people with a bad marriage. Yeah. Like, well said. look what you're putting into your body. Like, what you put in your body goes a long way. Are you working out? Are you taking care of yourself like that? Those are things that, like, you want to start to teach. Obviously, you want to do, but you want to teach your kids that. Yeah. Right? Like, you want them to see that you daily work to get better. You're okay with hard work. And man, love that woman. Like, love your, and then one thing I've learned in the last year, even more so, my baby doll got diagnosed with brain cancer. And like, you don't know when you're going. You don't know when things are going to get really, really hard. Like, I don't care if it's finances. I don't care if it's whatever it is you're arguing about right now with like spouses and whatever, like, who cares? It's absolutely irrelevant, man. Like, love your bride, show your daughters what that looks like. Like, that's the most important thing you can get them. Like, this is what a man looks like. This is how a man puts a woman first. Like, you're opening doors, you're loving on her, you're talking to her with respect. Like, you're showing and modeling what that looks like every single day. So you got a cool opportunity, man, with all those girls in the house and with mama at the helm.
No, I love it, man. Thank you so much. And thank you so much for jumping on today. Everybody can find David on social media at DavidPollock47, I believe it is.
Yes,
the See Ball, Get Ball podcast, the Family Goals podcast. He is an all-time great from the University of Georgia. And Jake and I are both very, very pleased and proud to call him a friend. So David Pollock, thanks so much for joining us. Follow us on social media at Punt and Pass, Punt and Pass YouTube page. This has been awesome. First of the interview series this offseason for Punt and Pass. So, David, thank you so much. For Jake Fromm and I, we'll talk to you guys next week. See you.